I was just saying.
I don't care about your opinion.
I'll tell you what I think.
What's that you say?
Would you just listen?
I don't think so.
Remember, ladies, one must not get one's knickers in a twist.
Please listen.
I'm trying to help you.
Listen.
I don't think so.
Excuse me.
I don't care.
Hey. Listen. Shut up and listen. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Shut Up and Listen. And I want to give a shout out to the listeners in Israel and England and the Philippines and Canada and Mexico and the United States. I can't believe it. It's so awesome what we get to do with technology these days. And yeah, I'm just really fucking grateful. I really, really am. And with that, I am very grateful for the guest that I have today. You have seen her everywhere, and she's been on Brooklyn Nine-Nine for the last four seasons, Stephanie Beatrice.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just sitting here with your beautiful dog on my lap.
Yeah.
Loving life.
Tag along.
Tag along. You're so sweet.
She is. So we obviously had a conversation before we had a conversation. Mm-hmm. I find that's the norm with my guests, which is incredible. And yeah, I'm just gonna get right into it with you.
Do it. Do it. Ask me all the things.
So we were just talking about loss, and we were talking about our dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you just had your experience with your dog.
Yes. Banjo died in December. I decided that it was time to let him go, and he died at home. We had someone come to the house, to my apartment, and it's been really hard. It's been surprisingly hard because this is my first dog. We were talking about how both of our first dogs were our first dogs, and it was like getting a dog as sort of an adult, and this was my first dog, and I don't know. I've had people say things like, oh, that's so sad. I'm so sorry. It'll be fine. You'll get over it. You're going to be okay. And like inevitably, yes, that's true. Probably. But I don't know. Sometimes it just feels like, oh my God. Like sometimes I feel like I stubbed my toe with emotion. You know what I mean? Like it just like something will happen and it's just like overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I think I'm subconsciously, unconsciously, now consciously trying to avoid those feelings and like hiding from them because it's so hard. It's so hard to feel that stuff. And it's almost embarrassing because it's like, quote unquote, just a dog, you know? And I know you understand that that is a ridiculous phrase because of Henry and like, but I do feel almost embarrassed sometimes that I feel so much emotional connection and like sadness about my dog.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the individuals that say like, oh, well, it's just a dog clearly have never had a dog.
No.
And for me, I'm like, don't speak to which that you don't know.
Yeah.
Don't speak about things that you don't know about.
Yeah.
And I really don't trust people that don't like animals. I don't.
Agreed.
I don't trust people that don't like animals.
Highly agreed. I remember right when I got Banjo, I remember reading some, you know, in some online article or something. It was this op-ed piece about this girl. It was like, I hate when people take their dogs to restaurants. It's disgusting. I don't want to see your dumb dog when I'm eating my whatever. And I was like, you're a monster. You're like clearly a monster. If you don't, if you're like not chill with me eating at, with my dog at a table, that's not your table.
Yes.
Like it's, we're fine. Yeah. It's fine. Like yeah. You're a monster.
Yeah. No. And this is what's interesting too, right? You know, because I do see individuals that have dogs, but they treat them like props.
Yeah.
More than beings.
Yeah.
That they have a relationship with.
Right.
Which is something that I don't understand either. I feel like it's the same way that people will have children.
Correct.
You know.
It's exactly like that.
In order to fill some hole. And what I mean by that is... It's all about them. There's a narcissism attached.
Yeah.
So it could be anything and it wouldn't matter.
Right.
You know, and what's interesting too, you know, talking about the grief and talking about the loss and the crying, you know, like I told you earlier, you know, it was a year ago, March 26th, that Henry passed, and I still get racked with like such incredible emotion.
Yeah.
You know, and I will still sob and I will allow myself the gift of having that experience because it's an honoring of the love.
That's a like, beautiful way to look at it.
The grief is a reflection that is beautiful. Of the love.
That is real, an honoring of the love because like when it happens to me, I feel almost embarrassed, like, especially when it happens in public, especially when it happens around other people, or like if someone just asks me like, how are you doing? And Obanjo died. And like, I sort of get overwhelmed with it. It becomes like this very embarrassing experience. And I truly wish it wasn't, or I wish I knew how to manage it in those instances too, because like, also I feel like I feel a responsibility for the other person's feelings, you know, and I don't want to make them uncomfortable and I don't want to make them, you know, I don't know what that is. I don't know. Heather's Girl. Shaking her head no right now. Just no. FYI.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. No,
mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm. Because I spent such a long time regulating myself and who I was for the comfort of others.
Yep.
And there's this great line where it's betrayal of self in order to not betray another is the highest form of betrayal. Because what I'm doing is, and it's that, and it's really selfish, that idea, because I've done it too.
Yeah.
Where it's, I'm going to regulate how I feel in order to not make someone else feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So it looks like I'm doing a really good and noble thing, right?
Interesting.
When in actuality, it's, this is too intimate and vulnerable for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to set a clear boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, like we were saying, and like you were saying, that's not how you feel. Bah, right. Bah, we're so conditioned to lie.
Yeah.
Where don't cry. Don't
how
cry.
How are you?
Yeah.
I'm great.
Fine. How are
I'm
you?
Fine. My God. Always at work. And I dabble with at work. Like when people are like, how are you? How was your weekend? I have dabbled in the past with being like, it was really hard. I had a hard one this weekend. And it's fascinating to see people's responses. It's like some people just don't want anything to do with it, which is fine, you know? But I think because of that feeling, because of the, it almost feels like in those instances, it can feel like a rejection of like me being my honest self and someone rejecting that and going like, I don't want that. I'm not interested. I can't handle that.
Yes.
And that is probably why I revert back to the other behavior, which is the, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, because I sense that rejection might come and I don't want it, you know, because I don't want to feel that rejection because I feel vulnerable then yes. I feel something from that exchange, you know?
Yes. Well, it goes back to that you're not being received.
Yeah.
Your feelings aren't being received.
Right.
So it's a preemptive strike of I don't want to take the risk that I might not be received.
Right.
So I am just going to keep it to myself. And that is different than I feel getting to be in one's intuition and intuitive self.
Yeah.
Of are you worthy? Is the other individual worthy of actually getting to hold space for you? Like, is the other individual actually worthy of getting to have that intimate moment? And uh-huh. some people aren't,
right?
I feel where it's, well, they can't or they won't. And for me, there's that saying in the Bible, like, don't cast pearls before swine.
Uh huh.
You know, I'm a pearl clutcher. I'm a pearl clutcher where it's, everyone is worthy of love and everyone is worthy of being received, but not everyone is worthy of my love.
Yeah.
Nor is everyone worthy of receiving me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice.
And also on top of that, like if I'm having a bad day and somebody asks, I am going to be honest.
Yeah.
But here's the difference. I'm not asking them in a moment to fix it.
Right.
I'm not asking them to comfort me. I'm not asking them to hold me. I'm not asking them to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I am stating my truth.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, my truth is no longer regulated by the reaction or response of
mm-hmm.
others.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's interesting to bring that up because then it makes me go like, okay, well, what are you looking for something, Stephanie, when someone asks you like, how was your weekend? And you want to respond, it was terrible. I had a really hard one.
Yeah.
Who are you responding to? And like, sometimes I think I find it more available to me to open up and talk about stuff like this with people that I don't know that well,
mm-hmm.
because I think sometimes in my more intimate or like my closer friendships, I think sometimes I'm afraid of being, I don't know if judge is the right word or what, but
a
it's
burden?
Like, yeah, a burden. Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. I don't want to give you all my stuff because I know you have stuff too. And I know that's going to make it heavier. And I just don't want to do that to you. So again, it's not unlike the I'm going to preemptively do this because I'm pretty sure this is how it's going to go. So I'm just going to maneuver things around so that you don't know anything's even wrong over here, you know, or like, you know, a little bit, you know, like you're checking in with me, but you don't really know the depths of it because like I haven't allowed you to see it because I love you and I don't want you to be burdened by it versus like a stranger, which is like, or like someone that I know pretty well, let's say at work, like some, like let's say someone on the crew or something asked me how I am mm-hmm. and I had a shitty weekend or something. And I say, oh God, I just felt like it was really hard. Like this happened and this happened. I don't know. It's like easier to say that sometimes to people that you almost like, it's almost safer in a way because you know that that exchange is just going to take like that 15 or 20 minutes that you're with them. Kind of like how, like if you ever get in a car with a taxi driver or something and you have this like incredible, like repartee and it's amazing. And then you get out of your car at LAX and you never see them again. And like the experience was like almost like a one night stand of emotions. But it's harder to have that, like, I feel like it's harder for me to have that with people that I know more intimately, if that makes any sense at all. Like, I'm specifically thinking about a couple of my really good friends, and like sometimes it's really difficult to get into difficult discussions about what I might be trying to figure out in my own life, like grief, for example. Mm-hmm. It can be really hard to talk about that with people that I love or think of as like really close friends, because I don't know. I'm afraid of their reaction. I'm afraid they're not going to give me, and this goes back to like, what am I looking, am I looking for something from someone else? Am I looking for like from those friends? Am I looking for like this sort of perfect reaction from them? If they don't react perfectly, then is that going to make me more upset that my friends don't understand me or what, you know? There's a lot of thoughts I just had.
No, I love it all. And it makes me think of like of a few things. It makes me think of, well, A, if that's how you act with your closest friends.
Yeah.
That they don't sound like very close friends.
Yeah.
They sound like friendships of emotional convenience and safety.
I mean, some of them, I will say, some of them are. I will say that. And I think I've figured that out more in the last couple months. And I also think that that's why I've been having a tricky slash hard time in the last few months, because I do realize that some of my friendships are, what did you say? Emotional convenience.
Yeah, emotionally convenient and
yeah,
safe.
Yeah. And to be honest, like the ones that I'm finding are more fulfilling lately are newer friendships, mm-hmm. but they are more, I guess, yeah, like closer, I guess. I don't know how to say it. I don't know how to say it. I mean, it's also difficult because, and I'm being very honest right now, it's also hard because in this podcast that I've been doing with my best friend, in the
Reality Bites.
Yes, Reality Bites. In the progress of doing that podcast, she and I have had a lot of life changes in the last, I don't know, 8 months, not even a year. And over the course of it, it's been sort of difficult to sort of examine our friendship and look at how that project was really much harder for us than we thought it would be. And it drove us apart in a lot of ways because we didn't have the same focuses about it. I didn't have the time for it. And I think it made us both resentful of each other in different ways. And as we were going along doing it, it sort of felt like it wasn't reflective anymore of what our friendship used to be,
mm-hmm.
which was we could sit around and talk to each other for hours. And it became much more like, it became that we were doing that for the podcast, you know?
So inauthentic.
Totally inauthentic. It became so inauthentic. And in fact, you can hear it in one of the, in the pod that we did at South By, because I had a film that was at South By, and then we did a podcast there. And the night before, we got in a big fight over the phone. And you can hear it in the podcast. Like, you can hear, I mean, I can hear it. Because I think one of the things that I like the best in acting, especially, like, looking at live work, is looking for authentic moments and witnessing them, because that makes me feel so intimately connected to human beings.
And seen.
Yes. And so when I listen to that podcast, all it makes me feel like is like, this is not really who I am. And that was really frustrating to me to listen back to it. Because what I really wanted to do was talk about our fight on the podcast. Like, I badly wanted to be like, this is why we had a fight, guys, because X, Y, and Z. And I don't want to like spill all my shit on this because, you know, but I badly wanted to do that. But I couldn't do it because of the constrictions of like the podcast, what we're supposed to be doing in the podcast, and also like she's not totally forthcoming all the time with like her really personal private stuff, so I didn't know if that, you know, it didn't feel like the right it just felt like very I'm like making movements like I want to get out of a jacket, like mm-hmm. it feels very like
constricting.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, we may not continue doing the podcast because it has put such a wedge between us in this way. But I do feel like I adore Courtney very much, but I feel like in certain ways I don't know what it's about. But I do feel like I can't be my full self in that friendship with her sometimes. And I think it's because of, I think partially because of the podcast, but like probably some other stuff too that I can't even see yet, you know? I don't know. Hard because friendships are not like regular relationships, you know? Like, not to say that I would like break up with Courtney, but I think that there is something that's like you can't work on them in the same way, or at least I haven't worked on them in the same way.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I have never worked on a friendship the way that I have a relationship. I don't know. Have you?
I have.
Yeah.
And this is my experience with friendships. I've definitely had friends break up with me.
Mm.
And one of them happened within the last year.
I've never had that happen. Tell me about it. Well, it sounds like I don't even know how does that happen? Does she text you?
She sent me a long text.
Oh my.
And it came about because she wasn't honest,
mm-hmm.
and had said that she would do something for me, and I take people at their word.
Yeah.
And then when I inquired about it 2 or 3 times and I hadn't heard from her, like, hey, what's up? What's going on? Ba, ba, ba. I got this long text back. And, you know, putting the onus on me in regards to, well, every time blah blah blah, I drop everything for you.
Mm.
I ba 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 ba, and you couldn't tell that I didn't feel comfortable saying yes to this thing, and ba ba ba. And I remember I brought it up with my ex, one of the many reasons she's now my ex. And she was like, you don't read emotional cues very well. Like,
whoa, that's so insulting.
The subtext, you don't read the emotional subtext. And
that's so insulting for an actor, especially.
I know. It's very, very insulting.
Oh, my God.
But that's also because, you know, I read the emotional subtext of everyone all the time, which is why I know that most people are full of shit.
Uh-huh.
And most people lie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine because I don't care enough about you to inquire.
Yeah.
You know, I really have to care about you to want to get in there,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
talk and discover and explore and get vulnerable in that way.
Yeah.
Most people are not worthy of that. Most people are not worthy of my time in that way.
Yeah.
And so when she had said that, I had had a moment of, well, I take people at their word that because that's how I am. You know, I'm a woman of my word. If I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Right.
You know, I mean what I say and I say what I mean, and I don't apologize for it. And I take responsibility, you know, and I've never been able to understand when it comes to friendships, why there wouldn't be complete honesty and openness and authenticity. You know, I can count my friends on one hand,
mm-hmm.
like individuals that I know that I can call. I mean, hell, I slept on some of their couches
mm-hmm.
when I was going through my breakup,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have some relationships where I won't talk to somebody for 2 years and then we talk and we pick up right where we left off. You know, and I don't necessarily see my friends on like a quote unquote regular basis.
Yeah.
You know, because life is big and life is full and it's thriving. And with that, if there are ever moments where I feel like there is something that has gone unsaid.
Yeah.
If I ever have a moment of feeling like I may have it inadvertently stepped on their toes,
mm-hmm.
I will ask and mm-hmm. I will say, hey, the energy feels a little strange and I wanted to see if we're okay.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that I've done to upset you or if I've inadvertently stepped on your toes, please let me know so we can talk about it.
Yeah.
And 96% of the time they're going through something that I've picked up on.
Yeah.
And didn't know how to word it and got scared and whatnot and were able to have a beautiful, beautiful discussion. And the other 4% of the time I have inadvertently done something that has upset them.
Mm-hmm.
And with that too, they were unsure of how to talk about it. I feel we talk ourselves out of feelings all the time.
All the time.
Especially as women.
All the time.
We talk ourselves out of feeling. And in addition to that, that idea of, well, I was listening to you talk about like your friends and not wanting to be a burden,
mm-hmm.
And whatnot. It's the, I get that because I still fucking do that. Like I really, really still fucking do that because it comes down to if I ask for what I need truly
mm-hmm.
and they say no and I'm not received and I'm rejected.
Yeah.
That's going to fucking hurt.
That's going to suck.
That's going to really feel bad.
Right.
And it's going to reaffirm the biggest fear / lie that I tell about myself, which is that I am unworthy.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, oh my God. And on the flip side of that, I then also rob myself and other people the opportunity to hold space for me.
Yeah.
You know, I rob myself of the opportunity of connecting with another individual in a way that is deep and honest and authentic and mm-hmm. vulnerable and connective.
Yeah.
And that's living in the unknown. That's living like mm-hmm. outside one's comfort zone. And if they are true friends, and this is again, like you have to be willing to take the risk in order to have the fucking experience.
Right.
Like one of my best friends in the world, her name is Kristen. And like, I love her so fucking much. She's like so awesome and amazing and beautiful and wonderful. And she holds space for me with such love. And so those moments, and I have it too, like in my relationship in moments, though they're tiny, tiny little blips. Because what the real feeling there's a humility in love.
Mm.
There's a real humility and where I finally feel like I get to put my bags down after being a world weary traveler.
Mm.
And I just get to sit.
Yeah.
And I get to be seen and I get to be held and there's no desire there. My friends have no desire to fix me because they don't see me as broken. They have no desire to do anything other than love me and hold space. And the loving act is just in letting me be.
Yeah. Like
letting me be, letting me cry, letting me be messy, letting me be angry, letting me be witnessed.
Yeah.
You know, and that takes risk.
Yeah.
That takes courage.
Yeah.
You know, and on top of that, more importantly, is that those friendships are rare.
Yeah.
Everybody else is an acquaintance.
Right.
Like everyone else is an acquaintance and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Like there's nothing wrong with that. I feel beyond fucking blessed that I'm able to say that I have like, I'm able to like call on five people.
Yeah.
That I get to have that experience with to varying degrees. And with that too, like getting to respect their journey and where they are.
Yeah.
And there are many different ways to hold space for a person where it's, if I don't talk to a friend of mine for a year, they don't respond, you know, initially, or if we lose touch, whatever it is, I'm not taking it personally.
Right.
I'm not saying, well, fuck them or blah, 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 or, oh my God, what did I do? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm obsessing and making it all about me.
Right.
It really is my window and door always open.
Yeah.
And this is, we get to come and go as we please because we know that the space is love.
Yeah.
And that's all. And true love is unconditional.
Yeah.
True love is without condition. There is no condition a friend of mine needs to meet.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
That is, yes, I know exactly what you mean. I'm sitting here wondering what I'm thinking about my own self and like how, if I'm very honest with myself, I have been like conditionally loving some of my friends, like
been a barter ship.
Yeah. And like, especially Courtney, I think like, I think there are things like, okay. So if we say real love is unconditional, I love you without question, without, you don't have to do anything for me, be anything for me, act in any certain kinds of ways.
And in addition, I love you whether or not you accept my love.
Right. Those things are
whether or not huge. You receive it.
That's like, that's like the way, that's the way Banjo loved me. Like, I don't care. I don't, you know, I mean, that dog would have loved me if I didn't feed him, you know, not that I would ever do that, but like he would, he would absolutely be like, oh, I guess we're starving to death together. Cool. All right. Well, do you want to do it on the couch or, but I think like, if I'm really honest with myself, I think about Courtney and I think like, for example, I can use the example of time and be, and say like, I, Stephanie, am very busy. I have, especially when I'm shooting, all this stuff going on. I have a crap load of other stuff besides the show that I have to take care of. I'm like trying to take care of myself in the meantime. And then here comes my friend who I've committed to doing this project with, saying, I need some of your time for this project. And for me, I turn around and I say, the conditions on our friendship, the condition of me being happy with you, rested on whether or not you understood my time schedule and how busy I am. And because it doesn't look like you understand that, I'm going to kind of be mad at you about that, you know, and not be really honest about it either, you know, and sort of say, okay, I'm going to turn it around on myself and say, Stephanie, you should be able to juggle this. You're the one that said that you wanted to do all this stuff in the first place. What are you going to do if you ever become like a big movie star? You're going to have a bunch more shit to juggle. So like, if you can't handle this, you're fucked for the future. What are you doing? You know, versus just saying to my friend, like, I think I'm kind of resentful about time right now and I don't have a lot of it. And when you texted me that you needed me, I got mad at you. sorry about that. It's not your fault that I don't have a lot of time. For example, you know?
What's the bigger thing underneath?
I mean, the bigger thing underneath is, I don't know. There's a lot of other things underneath. There's I mean, I'm trying to sort of think about, is it related to self-worth in some kind of way? Is it related to like, I don't know. I don't know what the bigger thing underneath is.
The idea, why did you say yes to doing the podcast?
Because I wanted to spend time with her and I wanted to.
And did you feel that you needed to do something? Did you feel that you needed to do something productive, i.e. create something like a podcast, in order to justify spending time with a friend?
That's interesting. That's a really interesting question, because at the time I was in a relationship with someone who was very, greedy. I want to say like greedy for my time. Because he could feel me pulling away from the relationship, he would get very jealous about me spending time with friends or outside activities or hobbies or whatever. And he would ask why we didn't have time to spend together. And the reality is we didn't have time to spend together because I wasn't making time for him, because I wasn't really enjoying spending time with him. And so I was filling my schedule not only because I wanted to fill it, but because I was avoiding looking at the disaster that my relationship had become. Yeah. So yeah, in a way it was like, well, now I belong to this club almost. Like I have this club meeting for my club of podcasts that I have to go to. Yes. So now I get to spend this amount of time with this person. I do remember saying to her in the beginning, because this was Courtney came up with the idea of the podcast, and like she asked me to do it, and it was like shortly after my ex and I had had this very big fight about whether or not I had enough time in my schedule to spend with him. And I remember saying to Courtney, I was like, I can only do this if it doesn't affect my relationship in any kind of like gnarly way, because he's already so jealous and greedy about time with me. And she was like, it won't. And it didn't at all. Side note, I remember saying to one of my other friends, I was talking to her about my ex. I was like, I don't know, he wants like 2 solid hours every week where we just like hang out, and I don't have like time for that. And my friend was like, Stephanie, it was my friend Shauna, she was like, Stephanie, you don't have 2 hours to hang out with your boyfriend. I was like, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to like squeeze it in. She was like, I don't think you want to squeeze it in.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to hang out with him for 2 hours. Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I do. You know, those are the kinds of things that like you don't see when you're in the middle of. But I clearly didn't want to hang out with him if I couldn't find 2 hours in my week, like 2 hours that I could just chill with him. That's big, because all I want to do now is like hang out with the person that I'm dating now. Like I want to just like hang out with them a lot.
The time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Abso-fucking-lutely.
Anyway, this is very interesting.
No, it's when we, and again, it's not like quote unquote good or bad. It just is, right? And it's the process of awakening. It's the process of waking up to your own bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
And with that too, though, the waking up to the limitation, mm-hmm. right? It's like coming out of that deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I would use everything and anything that I could as like a weapon against self. Mm-hmm. You know, to, as I say, I would gather evidence. I would gather evidence to support the case that I was a big piece of shit.
Oh my gosh.
And that I was unworthy.
Totally.
And X, Y, and Z. And I would unconsciously put myself into situations and I would lie all the time. Not only to others, but to self. And by lie, I mean omission. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say how I felt. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be honest because, and this isn't, and this just is what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as like a 34-year-old woman, I now get to take responsibility
right.
for it. And I also get to see how my past has informed my present, which then informs my future.
Yeah.
Right. So I was raised in a household where I equate it to just emotional landmines. Mm-hmm. And I never knew what was going to happen if I said the wrong thing, what might set an emotional landmine off.
Yeah.
And that idea of there was this lovely little game my mother used to play with me, which was called, "Do you know why I'm upset?"
Oh.
And I would panic and go, well, what did I do?
What did I do? What did I do?
What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? And sometimes I just didn't know. I just didn't know. And I would just sit there and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And I would sometimes get like ignored for hours or days mm-hmm. or
oh my God, your mother else. And my mother had similar techniques.
Oh my God, they should get together for coffee.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I learned as a means of self-preservation, as a means of survival, as a means of safety, to keep my feelings to myself, mm-hmm. you know, because it was about not rocking the boat, not upsetting others. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was crying, I remember and I'm like writing about this in my book, we had foster kids coming in and out of my house growing up until I was around 11. And the first two foster kids that we had stayed for about 3 years. Mm. And one day they were just gone. They just left.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember I started to cry and I was told like, stop, don't, it's okay. Don't cry. Bah, bah, yeah. Bah, bah, bah. It was either that my emotions were upsetting her mm-hmm. and I learned that her emotions were more important than mine. Mm-hmm. So I had to manage my emotions in order to make sure that peace was kept mm-hmm. because when she got upset, then all hell broke loose mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and there was that feeling of guilt and that feeling of shame. Like just by my being, I am causing upset in another human being.
Yeah.
You know, And there's like a lot of other fucking shit that went on. But so there was a subconscious identifier of, oh, my feelings, unless they're happy and joyous and bappa, mm-hmm. my feelings of sadness, my feelings of anger, my feelings of rage, uncomfortability, whatever it is, needs to be contained. Because if I make you feel uncomfortable,
yeah.
I don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
And I need to make sure that everything is okay. It's kind of like you're continually looking over your shoulder to just like, make sure, mm-hmm. like make mm-hmm. sure that mm-hmm. everything is fine.
Yeah.
And then I, it really has been like pretty recently, you know, that, I've been completely authentic in regards to my emotions and allowing myself to have them. I remember like I went through a period of in my 20s, where I didn't cry for like a good 3 or 4 years. I like didn't know how to. I was so like spiritually and emotionally constipated, you know, because I was terrified of what would happen if I let myself feel, you know, and now.
Did you know that at the time or was it just like, I don't know, I just can't cry lately?
I knew that there was, because I feel like we all have an inner knowing.
Yeah.
We all have a knowing. We just don't want to recognize
right.
it. Because it was what will happen? What will happen? Because mm-hmm. I've already had the past experience of what happens when I show this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're still chained to your past, you know, and I couldn't differentiate on a subconscious level that what happened then wasn't going to be happening that day.
Yeah.
As an adult.
Yeah.
But when like you do have experiences of trauma, it's hard to like the past is always in your present.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
my therapist calls it an unconscious tape.
Mm.
That's like continually playing in the background that you can't even really hear anymore. But it's just repeating a truth, some quote unquote truth that you recognize as a truth in childhood or something.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And that you're sure that if it's so unconscious that you don't even know that it's like molding your behavior, molding your choices because you haven't recognized or understood that it's there.
Yeah. And then you get to do the work.
Yeah.
You know, and I've gotten to do a lot of fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so fucking grateful. And I really do believe / know with a capital K that I wouldn't have the life that I have now. I wouldn't be present for the experiences of love, of joy, of pain, of grief, of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't go through every single thing that yeah. I went through, where it's, I really did need to experience one in order to then experience the other.
Yeah.
So then I could be in conscious choice. And I occasionally slip.
Mm-hmm.
I occasionally slip and I occasionally falter and I occasionally have like the tape come up, especially when it is dealing with and starting to deal with, it's like spiritual surgery, right? Where it's sometimes it's easier to deal with a bullet hole that goes clean through,
mm-hmm.
right? Because boom, in, out, done.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with emotional shrapnel, and it's, and as I have continued to grow and change and shift and be truly in my authentic self and voice and being, I'm becoming a fuck ton more aware of those tiny little shards
mm-hmm.
that are hitting the emotional, spiritual nerves
mm-hmm.
That I was previously numb to before.
Yeah.
And so that's the, I'm awake in every single sense of the word, right?
Yeah.
But with that too, it's the knowing that like the pain is serving its purpose in regards to making me aware that something is calling out to be healed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
if that makes sense.
It does make a lot of sense. Yeah, the pain is serving its purpose because something is calling out to be healed. Yeah. I mean, I try to think of that. I think especially in like a sort of, this happened to me last year right around my birthday, and it happened to me again this year, which is like things are going pretty well, and then I'll have like a month or so where it feels like a dark month, you know? And I can't sort of seem like things maybe have been like sliding down that way for a while and I've kind of felt it, but I've pulled myself out of it every time. And then something happens or things slow down or for whatever reason, I'll have like a very dark month. And I think, I don't know, I don't know how to get it out of it any faster. I wish I did, but I will say that coming out of it, like coming out of the other side of it, when I hear things like that, it makes me think, right, okay, like that wasn't for nothing. You didn't fail. It's not like, okay, let's pretend it didn't happen. It is for a reason. There's a reason that happened, you know, and there's probably quite a few. And so sort of sifting through the rubble of the thing is in a way the best part of it, I guess. I mean, it doesn't feel good. It like having a dark month doesn't feel good. It feels like shit. It feels awful. I didn't feel suicidal, but I certainly felt like I don't want to leave. I don't want anyone to see me. I want to isolate completely. I don't want to, you know, I want to pretend like, oh, I just spilled water on your carpet.
It's okay.
I just want to pretend like this isn't happening, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but to hear something like that is such a good, it's like hearing a beautiful piece of music or something where you're like, oh, right. There's a purpose to this part of my life that I want to pretend isn't happening or want to pretend I'm not engaging in or want to believe that, like, it's just this thing and it's going to happen and then it'll be over and I'll just like push it under the rug and it'll be fine. Everything will be fine, which is like, you could do it that way, or you could look at the thing and go, okay, what is this and why? And like, Not how can I avoid this from ever happening again, but how can I figure out what I actually need or want that's going to make this dark month less of an attraction?
And with that too, though, it's, you know, my quote unquote dark nights of the soul mm-hmm. have actually ended up being my greatest teachers.
Yeah.
So for me, it's always, what is this here to teach me?
Right.
What am I here to learn in this moment?
Yeah.
And it's, whether it's self-compassion, mm-hmm. whether it is learning to not judge my feelings mm-hmm. and to not should all over myself. You know, I should be feeling this. I should be feeling that.
Says who? I should all over myself again.
Yeah, I should all over myself all the time because I have this idea of who I think I should be.
And how it's all supposed to go.
Yes, and that if I'm not being this idea of who I think I should be,
then it's going terribly, obviously.
Yeah, and then it comes back to, well, whose script is that anyway?
Right.
Like, whose casting description is that?
Right.
Like, the character description most certainly does not reflect where I am in my current state.
Right.
And it was written by somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, and because I have spent my whole entire life going along to get along mm-hmm. and I will be whoever you need me to be in order for me to be safe and just get by and live mm-hmm. another day. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of, I think that this is like the micro of a macro, especially in regards to women.
Yeah.
And I've brought it up before in the podcast and I am going to bring it up again because it is something that really fucking makes me rageful and angry. Is that especially young girls.
Mm.
I remember that a family member of mine would grip me in these bear hugs. And I hated it. I hated it so fucking much.
Yeah.
It made me feel so uncomfortable. I didn't like it. And I remember two specific incidents in which I struggled to get loose. And they got upset. And my mother got upset because I had caused them to get upset. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just accept this hug? Mm-hmm. And that made me feel shame, and it made me feel guilt then, because it's like, well, what is wrong with me? Maybe like I can't accept love. Maybe I can't accept this. Maybe I can't accept that. And yeah, well, it just, I didn't know how to verbalize and vocalize that. It just made me feel uncomfortable. And on top of that, the idea that I would have to justify the fact that I just did not want my being or body touched in that way, held in that way, that I was taught in that moment unequivocally that another person's feelings are more important than my comfortability and my body and my autonomy. And that deals with like a fuck ton of other shit that we're not going to get into now, because to that point, it's when we tell children to go hug the grandparent, hug the aunt, hug the friend, hug the this, and we, teach them again that their bodies and their feelings and their comfortability are less important than someone else's.
Yeah.
It creates this perverse, you know, attitude and behavior that then when it comes to being an adult and either that's not how you feel, or no, you're not like this. Mm-hmm. You know what? I see you as a comedic actor. I don't see you as a dramatic actor. Mm-hmm. Well, oh, okay. It's, you're there to serve others.
Right.
And that's it. There's like no two fucking ways about it.
Right.
And I had the experience like the other week, and it made me think of money. When I was walking down the street and somebody had asked me for a cigarette and I said, no. Mm-hmm. And after I said no, and this actually wasn't a couple of weeks ago, I'm lying. This is probably like 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. And I remember after I had said no, I felt so guilty. I felt so bad. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was like, well, I had it. So like, I should have given it. Right. Mm. And that idea of, if you then just equate that to just like a woman being a woman
with
my her
body
and everything, where I don't really want to, but I should just give it.
You're talking about like basically every teenage girl's first sexual experience ever.
And that goes to, it goes to everything.
Yeah. It's
it
everything.
It really goes to everything where it's, we are not, our autonomy is stripped away from us almost at birth.
Yeah.
Our sense of self.
Yeah.
And who we are. And I really hope, you know, I don't have children. I don't plan on having children. I love children. But I also love them enough to know that I should not have them. Mm. But I would hope that today in 2017 that parents, especially mothers, are raising their daughters that if they don't want to hug someone or kiss someone, they don't have to.
I know. I see it. I see it a lot. I see it with my family sometimes, and I almost want to speak up and say things like, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Why don't you
know?
That?
I mean, I think, again, it comes back to that. It comes back to the exact same thing, which is like, how am I going to make, what if I make them upset? What if I make their parents upset? What if I, you know, what if my behavior causes someone else to be upset and then it's my fault?
I don't give a fuck anymore. I just don't. Because what happens then if they get upset?
Well, and also like, even if they do, you've already, because that example that you gave me about hugging a family member.
Yeah.
You can remember it
two times it happening, right?
I remember
you remember it happening quite a few times.
I remember it happening quite a few times, but I remember the two instances
where you were like, no, I don't want this.
I quote unquote fought back.
Right.
Even a little bit. And that I got in so much trouble. And so I learned to not fight back.
Right. So there, that wasn't necessarily repeated. I mean, that happened twice that you remember. I can remember instances. It was like one instance where my mother said something and it's like burned into my mental landscape forever, you know? So then when I think about this thing of like, oh, well, what if I did say, you know, like, I'm going to see my family today for Easter, and I bet you anything, one of my cousins is going to tell her little daughters to come and give us a kiss and to kiss my boyfriend who's coming with. And like, I should definitely speak up and say, like, only if you want to, though. You don't have to do anything that you don't want to do ever.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
Even if it does make them uncomfortable, because what if she remembers that? You know, and what if that's the thing that sticks in her head? And what if it starts making her say to herself, yeah, I don't want to. And and I'm allowed to say that. And what if that affects her behavior or her sexual life, like somewhere down the line? That would be really amazing. It's the same, like, it's the same when I hear. And again, it's like mostly because I don't have a lot of friends with kids that are older yet. I have friends that have just had babies. So I'm entering into the phase of like, they're going to be toddlers soon and stuff. But it makes me crazy when I'm sitting at lunch or something with someone and their daughters, and they start talking about the diet that they're on, or like how they can't have this, or they don't want this, or because I'm sitting there with an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old thinking, that's your mom and she's at lunch with me and she's talking about this shit. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like at your house.
Oh man.
You know? And all of the stuff that she's setting you up for without knowing it, probably, because if you said to a mom, do you want to give your kid an eating disorder? They're not going to say yes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and again, it all goes back to, I sometimes like to think of the multiverse that we live in, but like the planet that we live on, Earth, that's where we are, people. As almost like a computer program, you know, where there's so much code that's written, like so much fucking data, that we forget we're in the illusion. And that's part of the reason that I fucking love The Matrix and I fucking love Harry Potter.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like you wake up to the illusion. It's like what Jesus talked about, right? Where it's like, I'm in the world, but not of it, right? Where it's, I'm able to see the truth as the truth, which means that like, I'm able to manipulate matter, you know, like when they talk about like, what's the matter? Like, we're creating shit all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so when we wake up, waking up to, oh, whose truth am I living? And if I'm coming from a place of love, and I don't mean passivity, if I'm coming from a place of truth and honesty and authenticity, and power and pleasure and setting those clear boundaries, because I'm in alignment with my worth and who I am. It's not my business how well the message is received, because I know where it's coming from within me. Again, if I am in my honesty and if I am in my authentic self, that it's not about putting someone else down and it's not about making someone else feel bad. However, I am not responsible for that person's feelings. Like, I'm not. And most times when individuals end up becoming uncomfortable, it's because a truth has been struck within them.
Mm-hmm.
That they are unwilling to see or look at or deal with.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, it's, I feel like we're all wounded healers walking around, like opening up each other's wounds. So we have the opportunity to fucking heal.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm all about. Like for me, it's like, fuck, man. Like, I really just made a commitment to life this past year where I was just, all right, I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, suicide was always an option for me. It was always, and I know I've said this before in the podcast, guys, but like, these are the discussions that we have. It really was. It was just, yep. Well, if it gets really bad,
yeah,
I can check out.
Right.
So I already had one foot out the door.
Right.
So making the commitment to stay, be in this life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember I had a fucking major argument with the universe after I made the commitment. I was like, listen, you motherfucker, you better make this fucking worth it.
Yeah.
That if I'm fucking taking the goddamn risk to stay here and really commit, and you know that when I commit, I fucking commit. Like, I'm making the commitment to stay here. You better make it fucking worth it.
Yeah.
Because I'm willing to, like, put in the effort. Are you?
What happened?
It's like I just close my eyes. I close my eyes, guys, sometimes when I'm speaking and I need to take a moment to get clear. And I just saw an image of a butterfly. Like, that's really it. It's like the I've like emerged from my cocoon. I've like emerged from the cocoon, and it's, you know, you don't know as a caterpillar that you're going to become a butterfly. Maybe you have like an inkling.
Right. You know, sort of feel some instinctual.
Yeah, but you don't know. And then what is a cocoon? Like, in one regard, it's really safe. It's really nice. It's really warm. It's really cozy. It's like being in a womb, right?
Right.
But then it becomes constricting and restricting. And you're like, ooh, something's happening that I've got to. Ooh, I'm growing and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Ooh, it feels so uncomfortable.
Yes.
You know? And then before you know it, you're like, holy shit, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is amazing. It's like you don't know until you know. And I was willing to... I was willing to take that risk because, like, I had a knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a knowing. I was willing to take that risk. I was willing to take that jump because I had already... I know that, like, if I died tomorrow, I'd be all right.
Mm-hmm.
I know that if I don't need anything anymore, quote unquote, in regards to be taken care of, because I already know that I am.
That's amazing.
And with that too, it's the, it's now getting to like be an adult in the sense of, I'm getting, it's like the universe has become my lover, like my lover and my teacher, as opposed to a stern parent, you know? So it's like, and like with that too, it's, and it's more like I'm really just getting to like live a life that truly turns me on. And in moments that's terrifying to me.
Yeah.
And I reject it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, this is too much.
Yeah.
This is too much of feeling good. And what that, what I get to see with that is that it just is like more emotional shrapnel, more spiritual shrapnel, more of the like Catholicism, more of like that, you know, like fucking like old wounds and trauma and baba that like needs to be fucking healed.
Yeah.
You know, and then I get to delve deeper into pleasure, mm-hmm. and then I get to delve deeper into power. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing sexier than a woman that knows her power,
yeah.
her pleasure, and and just is. There's no apology.
Yeah.
There's no shame.
Yeah.
Free.
Yeah.
Like Eve. Really, Eve in the fucking garden. And I just read the like opening of the Bible.
Mm.
Genesis. And I was like, what the fuck?
Why?
Because God is like, listen, Adam, like, you need a mate, so I'm going to make Eve out of you.
Right.
Right? And he told Adam, like, Adam, you need to tell Eve. You can do, but you must not eat from the tree of knowledge. And so what I thought was, so you're literally putting the subtext in the beginning that God clearly doesn't trust his creation,
mm-hmm.
and is automatically testing them.
Right.
Like, that's a sick motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right there.
Just going to put it right in the middle of your paradise. This yeah. thing that you're not supposed to have.
That, and also like with that too, it's the, it drives home the idea, even if it's subconscious, that to be in your knowing is bad.
Oh my God. It used to make me insane, that story, because I remember being a child and thinking, okay, first of all, this doesn't seem right that God made Adam, but then he didn't make Eve. Also, he just like took part. So are we less, like, I remember having these thoughts mm. as a kid thinking like, that seems strange that we would be getting told a story and that half of the gender in this room is like feeling like, so I'm not an original. I'm a chunk grown off of the original.
Yes.
I remember thinking that as a kid.
Yeah.
And then I also remember thinking, this is so, not in these words, but this is so fucked up that they're not supposed to know. Like, it's literally called the tree of knowledge. I would be eating that thing all day, yes. every day.
Absolutely.
Everything on it. I'd be like pulling the leaves off, breaking off stems, yes. and like burning them and sniffing yes. up the fire. Like, what?
Yeah,
it's the tree of knowledge. Like,
I know. And with that too, it's that they talk about knowledge as power.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, they say ignorance is bliss,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, I really do like, I know I brought up Jesus like three times today. Maybe it's because
it's so interesting to
Easter
talk about
Sunday.
It. Yeah, probably.
That idea of like, don't ye know that ye are gods, that these and even greater works shall you do, you know? And, I'm not religious. I'm very spiritual, you know, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or, you know, fucking like Buddhist texts, you know, like whatever the fuck, like I just love knowing,
mm-hmm.
I love knowledge in that way. But really it's the, what better way to quote unquote keep people in line
yeah.
than to keep them in fear.
Oh yeah.
And rob them of their power.
Yeah. I mean, you think about, okay, what you said was, what better way to keep people in line
mm-hmm.
and rob them of their power.
Mm-hmm.
Than fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of not the knowledge. Like something bad is going to happen to you.
And that you need to meet all these conditions because it goes to, I mean, it's Jesus fucking Christ. You know, it's like the Bible stories, like are updated editions of stories that have been being told for centuries, mm-hmm. going back to fucking like Horus and mm-hmm. Egyptian, like allegories. It's the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same. And I don't think that there's anything wrong that like people believe what they believe. Like that is totally, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And with that too, though, it all leads back to the same thing, which is love.
Yeah.
You know, like energy doesn't die. It merely changes form. Like, yeah. I think that like it's, and then on top of that, for fuck's sakes, like Constantine with the like edits of the Bible and blah, 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 blah. And like taking away like the Mary Magdalene's text, taking away like the Gospel of Thomas, taking away Mary's text.
Yeah, what better way to continue to make women feel less than and invaluable than to not give them representation in one of the, you know, one of the most widely read texts ever.
Yeah, you know, like the truth that like Mary Magdalene, you know, was Jesus's wife.
Yeah. You and know, probably an apostle in
the 13th disciple.
Yeah. Disciple, you know, in her own right. But let's instead, and I mean, unfortunately our own media has like reaffirmed, what do you call it when you like shore something up? Like you support that idea.
Yes.
Like there's not really, I don't think there's any mention in the Bible of her being any kind of prostitute. Is there?
I'm sure that people,
it depends on which edition. Yeah. Like, I'm sure
the
they will.
And they confuse this
edition, but like
the prostitute with like the ba ba ba, you know, but he appeared to the two Marys first is all I'm saying.
I agree that I have lots of friends that are deeply religious, and I think that it gives them a sense of purpose, value, worth. It can be so beautiful and such an amazing power.
But with that too, though, is it giving them a sense of safety in the sense of
totally?
Well, I know, and ba ba ba. As
I know, no matter
to,
what, I'm going to be okay.
But like with that. To the idea of questioning, because I remember being taught, and I'd mentioned this a few weeks ago, where CCD, like I grew up Roman Catholic, mm-hmm. and I remember getting kicked out of class all the time.
Oh, I got kicked out of Sunday school so many times.
Ask questions.
Ask the wrong questions.
And
excuse me, so does that mean if no one's heard of our Lord Jesus Savior, that means that they'll automatically just go to hell because yes. they haven't heard of him.
Yes.
Well, that's why it's your responsibility to spread the message. But okay, but what if, and I would have these like arguments. Mm-hmm. Oh, and in I guess it was beginning of high school, probably ninth grade or something like that, I just could not wrap my brain around the idea that gay people were just automatically going to hell. I couldn't wrap my brain around it. I was like, it doesn't make any sense. Because if God created all of us perfect and these people were born gay, there's a, what, please help me figure out, there's a disconnect there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Kicked right out.
Yeah, but the argument then is that we're not born perfect.
Right.
We're born
then it's like,
imperfect. And that's because of Eve.
Right. Eve.
Yeah, where it's like, that is the longest standing resentment I've like ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Like it's a resentment the stupidest that's thing still ever. Going strong. And then it was so interesting. I'd had a dream the other night. And in the dream, I was with like what seemed like a group of like sorority girls or something. And someone started singing All Holy Night.
Hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, okay, who's going to take the harmony? and then someone took the harmony, and then I took like the harmony's harmony. And I remember waking up being like, I need to read the lyrics to Oh Holy Night. And then I read the lyrics, and I'm actually going to like pull them up right now.
Oh Holy Night. Because the stars are brightly shining.
Yeah, but the original.
Oh, there's an original?
Yeah, because it was written by a Frenchman.
And oh, it was in French?
Poem. Yeah, it was originally a poem that was written, and then they put it to music. So, and I thought it was just, yeah, it was written by Placide Capot. I think I'm saying that right. It was composed by Adolphe Adam in 1847.
Wow.
Isn't this so interesting, you guys? So this was the literal English translation. Midnight, Christians, is the solemn hour when God as man descended upon us to erase the stain of original sin and to end the wrath of his Father. The entire world thrills with hope on this night that gives it a savior. People kneel down, await your deliverance. Christmas, Christmas, here is the Redeemer. Christmas, Christmas, here is the Redeemer. May the ardent light of our faith guide us all to the cradle of the infant, as in ancient times a brilliant star guided the Oriental kings there. But the thing that I thought was so funny was that what's the line of when God as man descended unto us to erase the stain of original sin and to end the wrath of his Father.
Of his Father, yeah.
Where it's like, no wonder everybody loves Jesus. They're like, oh my gosh, dude, you have no idea. Before you got here, it was hella crazy. Like, it was crazy, and your pops was, like, doing all sorts of nonsense.
Being a real dick. Like, but then you came. Thanks so much, Jesus.
Like, thank you so much for putting a chill on the plagues and for feeding us. Oh, my God. You, like, just organized this, like, fucking lunch on the hilltop.
I think that that's, I do think that that's the feeling that some people have with religion is, like, this, like, feeling of, like, oh, thank God you're here.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks so much for coming. Oh, thank you. Because life is hard, crap, whatever. Yeah. I mean, in a way, I think it's like for someone like my mom, who is, my parents are both immigrants to the U.S. and they were both raised Catholic. And there's no, when I started going to therapy, my mom was like, why are you doing that? You know, you're not crazy. She was very embarrassed and like very kind of angry about it. But I think for her, church is like therapy in a weird way.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to say something else really weird, but I think in a weird way, it's worked for her. I don't know if it works for everyone, but I do think for my mom, there was a long period. I think it could have been faster maybe with therapy, but like a long period of like self-examination through the stories in that Bible and the stories that were sort of, I don't know, what's the word? I mean, it's not unlike Shakespeare, right? Like all of those stories were around before him.
Yeah.
It's just the way that he wrote them somehow spoke to us.
Yeah.
That, you know. And it doesn't always speak to you, meaning that like you could see a really bad production of Shakespeare and just be off of it forever.
Yeah.
You could read it and not really know what you're reading and things just fly over your head. It takes like digging and it takes like, what does that word mean? And digging and digging and looking and looking.
Yes.
And I think in the same way, the stories in the Bible can be that for people. They can dig and dig and look and look. And then through that, they can examine their own selves and sort of be, because my mother and I, like my mom, it was very, we had a tumultuous childhood and adolescence. And I think there was definitely a point where I was like, I don't think I want her to know me very well. Mm. You know, I don't want to let her in that way because she's caused me so much pain. But really in the last, I would say like
10 years, she's just, it's like being around another person. Mm. It is like meeting someone new when I meet my mom now. I mean, if I come to it with trying to let go of that baggage and stuff and letting go of, which is very hard to do, especially if you were the child and there was an adult there, because as an adult now, you look at that behavior and go, you were the adult, mom. Yes. You were the one that should have been responsible for yourself and me.
Yes.
Because I'm learning everything. I'm learning everything from your behavior and modeling, like, oh, so this is how we do things. This is how I act. This is how I should act. This is who I'm going to become based on the rules and parameters you're setting out for me. And to be an adult and look back at someone's rules and parameters and go, you were a fucking mess. You were out to fucking lunch. You were, you know, whatever list of terrible things. It's really hard. It's really hard. And like, I don't begrudge some of my friends for distancing themselves from their families or cutting off ties completely, because like, I understand, like, that's necessary. And sometimes it's like, there's not room for any growth, you know, because it has to be both parties coming together. And I really feel like my mom has done an incredible job of that in the, like, especially in the last 10 years of like coming to a place of seeing herself in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. Not unlike therapy. Like, I sometimes feel like my mom has gone to therapy, but it's just been church for a long time. And it's, she's been lucky that she's had like good spiritual teachers at that church, you know, and she's done her own work too. But it really is like, I remember my ex did have some really great points. And one of them was, he's like, your mom's not who she was. Like, you have to look at her as a new person. And that really made me start thinking that way. Because now, if I introduce my, like, if my mom was here, you would love her. She's adorable, really funny, charming, very sincere. And I wasn't able to see that, any of that stuff, especially the sincerity, because I was working off of a memory of what she was to me when I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just like a monster.
Yeah. You know what? And with that too, I'll tell you what, that is fair.
Yeah.
And that is okay.
Yeah.
Right? Because just because someone changes and people do change.
Yes.
It doesn't then negate the responsibility.
No.
In regards to how their behavior affected the life of another, especially a child.
Absolutely.
And I feel that especially in this country, this quote unquote fucking Christian country. Mm-hmm. Fuck you very much.
Yep.
Is that idea of forgiveness. And it is so saturated with misinformation that I really did believe that forgiveness meant that whatever else someone did to me, like, it was making it okay. Like, what they did, what they did was okay. And then I had to get over it.
Yes.
And that my feelings then about it didn't matter, because forgiving someone is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it sets you free. Mm-hmm. And blah, 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 where it's like, you know what? Actually, I first need to be witnessed in the experience of my rage.
Yeah.
I need to actually be witnessed and have the experience of having my feelings about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people want to jump that step.
Oh my God. Almost everybody jumps that step. Almost everyone jumps that step. Because it's icky. It's like, and it's icky for other people who love you watching you go through it, which is like, It's icky to see you be so mad at your mom. It's so icky. It's so icky to see you be like, can't you just forgive her?
Yeah, because it's like they're, and that's the thing. It's like they're uncomfortable.
Yes.
It's like, can't you make a decision about your life so I get to feel more comfortable?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because this is making me feel uncomfortable, and this is calling up for me consciously or subconsciously that idea that there's some shit that I don't want to look at.
Yeah.
Or on the other hand, they're so out of their goddamn fucking minds.
Yeah.
That they feel really comfortable on their spiritual hilltop being incredibly condescending, speaking about things that they know nothing about.
Right.
And right. To which I say, you know, thank you and fuck you.
Yeah.
And the individuals that I get the gift of having in my life get to act as mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to act as mirrors in terms of reflecting the highest truths, not only about who they are, but also who I am.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like those are the gems that yeah. I desire to fly with and align with,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. And that I've never in my recent friendships, and by recent, I mean the last few years, I've never once been made to feel shame for decisions that I've made.
That's amazing.
For me, I've been met with, I love you and I support you.
Yeah.
And I think that what you're doing is courageous.
Yeah.
And that is great.
Yeah.
And that, and that's it. Like nothing more, nothing less. It really is just love.
Mm.
Like really love.
That's really incredible.
Yeah.
That's really incredible.
So I'm excited to talk with you in the future to find out how your friendships
yeah.
and relationships have yeah. changed.
I would love to continue this discussion. It's good.
Well, like, will you come back?
I would love that.
Oh my God.
Deeply love that.
Okay. And with that too, I ask that you actually pause before you say that to see.
I deeply love that.
Okay.
I would love to come back and have another
awesome
heart-opening conversation
just in terms of time and making time
oh yeah
and being open and yeah. all that good stuff
plus these wonderful pups.
I know, and Tagalong has been, she's been so good.
Yeah, good.
All right guys, well thank you again so much for listening, and my love, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having
me. Such an awesome convo.
It was.
And yeah, I'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.